Welcome to Unmatch Me Now, the podcast about horrible online dating experiences and dating ethics. I am your host, Idan, an Israeli based in Berlin. Hope you're all having a good week so far. Before we start, make sure to follow the podcast on Instagram or Twitter at Unmatch Me Now. And if you think you have some stories to share and want to be a guest on the podcast, please reach out to me on social media or at unmatchmenow.com. Now, let's greet our guest for today. So, Zahira, how are you doing today?
I'm really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. It's the end of winter, almost, so yay. I don't know. You're based in London, so I'm not sure how the winters are there compared to Berlin.
Absolutely terrible. the lack of sunshine, it's dark all the time. I'm just grateful now that I leave work and it's still slightly light. You know, that's what we all look for in life.
Yeah. Do you feel like the dating life is affected by the seasons in London as much as in Berlin?
I think people are probably more keen to date in winter than in summer, weirdly. Like In summer, everyone's having, but like, I think people meet more organically in summer, right? You're out more, you're enjoying yourself. Whereas I think winter, we're all hermits sitting on our dating apps.
Yeah.
Depressed as hell, wanting to get out, but also not wanting to leave the house.
Yeah, I get that. Okay, so maybe you can introduce yourself actually a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be great. So hi, everyone. Thank you for having me on Unmatch Me Now. I absolutely love the podcast and I love that there's a place that we can all talk about the trials and tribulations of dating and how hard it is in the modern world. So thank you very much for having me. My name's Zahira. I live in London and I am a serial unsuccessful dater. I have used every dating app. You can imagine the league, Tinder, Hinge, Bumble, Coffee Meets Bagel, you name it. I have tried it. I've even tried and failed, which I wouldn't recommend. But, you know, I've tried them all to see what's out there. And I've generally, when they first launched, I think I had quite an I enjoyed most of them. I think as the years have progressed, they've become a cesspit of despair. So I'm on a one-woman crusade to change that and actually make dating something that we can all fall in love with again and hopefully help people find their long-term partners. So I founded a company called Hati, H-A-T-I, if anyone that's listening, with a concept of actually ensuring that every match turns into a date.
Okay, so I read the article that you sent me from Metro, if I'm not mistaken. Right?
Yeah.
And I went through the website. And I mean, generally, there is a very bold statement here. You know, like you're just coming in hot, like no fucking hostages. It's like everything else is just not working. I want to revolutionize it, which is an interesting approach. And I think we haven't had this in online dating for a while. So yeah, I'm curious to kind of hear about your experience that led to that. But just to kind of give the rundown of what Hati differentiates itself from other dating apps, maybe you can explain a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to be really clear, right? I think dating apps are important. I think they give you access to people you would never otherwise meet. And I think, like all technology, if we use it correctly, it could be a massive source of good. I just think today, the way that we've created the dating apps is a source of anxiety, depression, you know, feeling worthless. I don't know about you. I don't know if you've ever used dating apps, but you probably have. And I don't. Yeah. I used to download them.
Huh? I mean, that's why I'm here, right?
Exactly. But like, how many times have you downloaded and deleted the dating apps?
So, funnily enough, I think from the knowledge I gained so far, it's something that women do more often, the downloading and deleting, than men, because your experience is vastly different than ours. I think my experience is usually there is not a lot going on dating apps. So there's not, I mean, that also could make you angry, right? Because like you want to get yourself out there, but you have probably the opposite experience, that there's like too much going on, you know?
I think it's too much, but not enough at the same time, which is a really interesting dichotomy.
Yeah,
you get loads of matches because the way, and this is really interesting, this is what I learned when I've been doing all of kind of the research to build my own dating app, is men swipe very differently to women.
Yeah.
So they go, boom, 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 yes to everyone. And then they pick from the people that say yes to them back. Whereas I think women are a lot more discerning in the filtration process and we kind of swipe more consciously, if you will. Yeah. So I think things like Bumble, which are designed to empower women, actually really do the opposite of that. They're actually terrible for women because you spend so much time messaging people that have no interest in you.
I find it really... So first of all, I don't know if you heard, but Bumble CEO said this week that they're going to change their women text first kind of thing, which I found kind of hilarious. Because again, like from talking to people on this podcast and offline, a lot of women really dislike that feature, you know, because it's kind of arbitrary. Nothing really necessarily changed in that sense. It's just Tinder with an extra step, you know. But
and it puts all the onus on us. Like I have to be funny 100% of the time.
Well, I mean, from my perspective, I kind of like, haha, because, you know, like finally how the turntables have turned, you know, but, you know, and I think it's still very arbitrary. And a lot of the times it doesn't really consider the fact that people have like busy lives and the whole 24-hour thing, you know, it's like, I don't get it. But I want to like challenge a little bit what you said about like swiping behaviors, because I actually think that men swipe the way they swipe because the apps kind of like the way that the mechanism the apps have with the matching algorithm kind of force them to do that because they don't get a lot of matches. So they might as well just like try to get matches and then start the filtering process. But then on your side, you see, oh, I take a lot of time to select matches, right? And then I get a match. You think that they had the same intent and effort in making it. But actually, that's the point where they start to think, is this a match I want?
Yeah.
So then it's frustrating for both sides. So it makes no sense. So, yeah.
I think, but that, and what's really interesting is no one has really rethought dating apps since their invention. Like Tinder came out and it was revolutionary. And I think it was so exciting. And then everyone has copied it, but made a niche app. So like Bumble changed who you could talk to. Hinge actually started out as friends of friends, and then that didn't work. They launched at the same time as Tinder, and then they were like, okay, this isn't quite working. So they then kind of did Tinder 2.0, but it was meant to be more thoughtful matches. You have Fields for people that want slightly different kinds of relationships. You've got Muzz dating, you know, J-Swipe that are targeted at specific religions.
Yeah.
But when was the last time we had a dating app that was completely different? Like, throw it all away and start from scratch.
Yeah. I think a lot of, like, from what I know, a lot of people went to, like, started going to speed dating events and stuff like that, you know? That's, like, happening. Like,
yeah. I hate speed dating, but everywhere you read at the moment, people are fatigued with the dating apps. They aren't giving you meaningful connections. And I think when you're really looking to date someone with intention, what you're looking for is those meaningful connections. And that's what Hattie is all about. It's for the intentional dater who is serious about, you know, trying to meet someone and actually putting some time into that. So we work completely differently. Go for it.
Just before you continue, can you define what a meaningful dater might be?
I think it's someone that is looking to find someone for the longer term. So someone who actually is interested in investing in a other human to define whether that could be a relationship or not. What I'm not saying that we're going to do is, you know, find your perfect match on date one. I'd love to. But we're saying that we will connect you with like-minded people who are interested in having a real conversation, right? Not, hey, how are you? Silence.
Yeah.
How many times does that happen on a dating app?
A lot.
Hey, how's your week going? Would love to like meet for a drink. Silence.
Yeah. Like, been there. Yeah.
Been there, done that. Got 50 million t-shirts that look a bit like it.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm not immune from it, right? Like I've done that to people. You get busy, you get to fly. Like it's not saying that like I'm perfect and all this. I'm definitely not. I've definitely ghosted people before, but unintentionally. Like you swipe on a Friday evening or a Saturday evening or Sunday evening, you wake up and you have six matches and you try and as much as possible keep up with everyone. but then some will fall off the face of the earth, others you forget about, and it just, it's chaos.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. So Hattie comes in here, right? And yeah. Hattie does what?
So on Hattie, you can never message someone. We have gotten rid of the entire messaging functionality because I don't fundamentally believe that you can build long-lasting connections via, or at least start them via text. So we are voice and video call only. So the way it works is one, you create a profile, you tell us what kind of dates you like to go on. You tell us things that are really important, like what are your values? Like, do you want kids? Do you want to be married? Things that actually matter in the longer term. Mm-hmm. We don't ask about your education. It's not important. Like, there are things that are important when you're finding a match and the things that aren't. Then we ask you once a week when you're free, and you can give us time slots in 15-minute time slots. It's not a long time that we're asking for. When you match with someone, and again, we give you that responsibility over matching because we think that's still really important. Mm-hmm. But when you match with someone, we book a call in both of your diaries at the time that you're both free. And at that time, we call both of you. So you never have to exchange numbers with someone. It's completely secure. We call both of you and connect you both on a call, and you have a 5-minute call. After 5 minutes, the line goes dead. So you have 5 minutes to just have a conversation with someone, a bit like you and I are having right now. But it just means that you actually get to connect with someone. You get to hear their voice. You get to hear, you know, the way they speak. And if you want to, you can opt for a video call so you can see their body language. And we think kind of you can get more out of a 5-minute phone call with someone than you can over kind of a day of messaging with them. Then when you go back into the app, you have to let us know whether you want to see that person again or end the match. So what you don't have is your dating graveyard of people that you have spoken to, and you know they just sit there forever for your 50 or 100 people that you've just, you know, have gone nowhere. If one person says they want to see someone again and the other person says they don't want to, obviously we do the lowest common denominator. So that match will just disappear, and we inform the other person. So at least that person kind of gets closure. So we're not ghosting people. We're not ignoring people. We're actually being really open and honest about where we stand in the dating process. If you both want to see each other again, you get a choice of a video call, a voice call, or you get to meet them in person. If you choose to meet them in person, we book the date for you. We send you all the details for the date. You just have to confirm that. And then the two of you go on a date. So there's a real safety aspect around that as well, because venues will know that you're booked through us. We have a tracker of where you've been, who you're meeting, etc. So for me, as a woman, you know, when Tinder first launched, my biggest fear was someone was going to kidnap me on a date. And I used to tell my friends, I'm going here. Find my friends. Like, don't let me die. So I think for me, that's another massive safety thing, right? It's making sure that people are safe at all times. And we book the restaurants directly. They know that they've come through us. And then once you finish that date, we then give you the option to kind of, you know, continue it offline if it went really well, or tell the other person that you're just not interested. So again, it's keeping that level of like trust and honesty around the dating process, because having difficult conversations is hard, right? Like, one person might have thought it went really well, the other person might not have enjoyed it. And actually having that conversation can sometimes lead to people ghosting, because they're like, it's easier for me to not say anything than, you know, reply to this text, which requires me to say that I'm not interested. So we take all of that out. And then we have a ghosting penalty. So, and I think people are getting really confused by this ghosting penalty. We're not saying that you have to go on a million dates with someone, or you have to continue it if you're not interested. But if you have agreed to go on a date with someone or agreed to speak to them on the phone, we expect you to turn up to that. And obviously there are unforeseen circumstances, but, and we'll look at that on a case by case basis. But if you say you're free at 6 o'clock for a phone call and we call you at 6 o'clock three times and you don't answer, we want it to be a positive dating experience for everyone. And therefore, like, you will get banned from the app, because we believe that, like, we want people to do as they say and say as they do. Mm-hmm. So I think that's just another unique feature.
What does constitute as ghosting in the app? Like, how is that defined?
It's just if you don't turn up to a date. Like I just said, so like if you said you're going to speak to someone at 6 p.m. and we call you three times to connect you both and you don't answer, that's ghosting.
But it's not about the text. There's no texting, right?
No texting.
Yeah. Okay. So that's the ghosting. Gotcha. That simplifies the concept a bit more. Yeah. Interesting. And at what you've said, people are confused about it. What's the confusion?
I'm not really sure, but so obviously we have an Instagram. We've been posting kind of different quirks about the app. And a couple of people have messaged or kind of commented on the ghosting policy and said, you don't understand safety, you should get a safety officer. And I think, mm-hmm. I don't know that people completely understand that what we're all, the only thing we're saying is turn up to the things that you've agreed to turn up to. I think that's pretty uncontroversial.
Yeah. And you're not forcing anyone to like do video calls or anything, right?
Nope. It's all by choice, right? So you tell us your preferences. We will always do the lowest common denominator. So if someone says meet in person and you say, I want to do a phone call, we'll do a phone call because we don't want to make anyone uncomfortable, put them in a position that they're not comfortable with. But we do believe if you've had enough interest to say you want to speak to them on the phone, you speak to them on the phone.
Yeah. Hopefully. Yes.
Hopefully.
Yeah. Okay. So the process that user, like a person, will go through the app would be to kind of like say, hey, these people look interesting. Then if these people also find you interesting, you arrange a call, like an introductory call, 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Then after that, you can make a decision if you want to keep going. If yes, then you can arrange another call. Is there a timer for that second call?
No, the second call is unlimited.
Okay, interesting. And then after that, you said that the app arranged some sort of a meeting location or?
Yeah, so because we have everyone's location and we have their dating preferences, we then book them in for a date. So if you say, I don't drink and I would never go on a drinking date, but I would do an activity like bowling, we have all those preferences stored from when you join the app. So then we can book you in to go bowling because we have your availability as well. And all you guys have to do is then confirm the date. So we'll say, hey, this is our suggestion. This time, this place, this location. Are you happy with that? Confirm. And then once you're both confirmed, we confirm it to both of you.
Cool. Interesting. Okay. And then is there anything that happens after that when people meet?
Yeah. So after that, when you go back into the app for the first time, you have to either say you want to meet them again and we can book another date for you if you want, or you can say, I really like them, I'm going to take it offline. Or you say, actually, I'm just not that interested in them, so we're going to cancel the match. And if you take it offline, every couple of weeks, the app will just ask you, hey, are you still seeing this person? Would you like to pause your profile if you are?
Okay.
So it's trying to be a bit more intentional about the questions that we all find really difficult to ask, right?
Yeah. So it's like trying to also eliminate people like using dating apps as a sort of like a getaway tool for a lot of different reasons and just focus on the person they're dating, supposedly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And what would be like, in your opinion, the main challenges in like, because it sounds like it's very location based, like it's very hard to kind of like expand it to like rural locations, you know, stuff like that. Do you have any particular intentions about where do you want the app to migrate to, like in terms of locations or anything like that?
So the interesting thing with an app like this is you're right, it's very location specific, but all dating apps are, right? Like you need to have a critical mass for them to be useful. So the way we're doing it at the moment is we're building the waitlist in London. So because that's just like one area. Once it gets to kind of a big enough size, the app will go live to create your profile. And then once everyone's created their profile, the app will actually go live for matching once we have enough profiles to match people against. And we're going to do the same in every country and every jurisdiction we want to launch. So people aren't just joining and saying, oh, I've got no one there. It will say, like, there are this many people in your location so far. We need this many for it to launch. So check back in a couple of weeks and we'll send you a notification when it's ready. So right now, very much the focus is the UK, just to kind of get critical mass there. And then hopefully spread to continental Europe as quickly as possible.
Cool. Yeah, that's an interesting strategy. All right. So what has been the journey that led you to make a dating app?
God, this is a great question. I am a full-time head of strategy for a bank. I have a dog. I have a very busy social life. I do bodybuilding competitions. And a couple of years ago, I was sat on the dating apps and you've probably felt this, right? Like you just despair and you're like, this is not like I'm on three of them. This isn't working. I remember I'd agreed to meet a guy for a date And it got to the day and I just texted him being like, hey, are we still on for this evening? We'd set a time, a place.
Mm-hmm.
No response.
Yeah, that happened to me so many times, yeah.
And I was like, I can't believe that 30 years ago, this kind of behavior was so prevalent. Like,
probably not, no. But also you couldn't really reach people that much 30 years ago, I think, you know? So they had the pressure of
planning out.
Right, yeah.
But even if you met someone in a bar and then, like, you know, agreed to trade numbers, I feel like you'd actually just go on the date because you've met in a bar, you know, like you vibed a bit, but like you're with your friends, you don't want to, like,
I think it's the abundance, you know, it's the abundance of.
But is there really abundance, or do we just perceive there to be abundance, right?
Both can be true, I think.
True. But I think it just gets to a point where, like, dating starts feeling like a full-time job. Like, I have to swipe and then I have to message these people and you have the same conversation.
Yes, you do.
50 times. Like, it was just exhausting, right? Like, you're like, and then you just stop putting in effort. And I became the problem. I was like, okay, well, I'll match with all these people. Maybe I'll say, hey, maybe they'll message me and then I'll decide I don't want to message them back because they've just sent me now an essay that I need to reply to. And
it's something that's supposed to be exciting. And I think a lot of it kind of like deflates the excitement of it, you know?
Yeah. So, and I want to make people excited about dating again. I want to get those feelings where, like, I've had a 5-minute phone call with someone and it's gone really, really well. And I can't wait to see them again. Not like, oh God, he's just like, he's put a load of effort into this message, but now I have to read, like, you know, quite a long paragraph. And then I have to, like, think about this really long paragraph and then think about how I'm going to respond to it. And then I forget to do it. And then it's a week and I'm like,
yeah.
Oh, like, we are, as a society, right? I don't know about you. I get pinged via email. I get pinged via my personal email. I get pinged? Like, people email me. People call me. People WhatsApp me. There are so many ways that we're contactable today.
Yeah.
It's exhausting.
Yeah. It is exhausting, yes. Like, I mean, basically, it's part of our job as humans now to communicate with our little device, you know, to other people everywhere, basically. So,
All the time. And I think that there was a really interesting study done. This was years and years ago. But around, like, how many people you can actually keep up with as a human being. Like, and I think the numbers are somewhere around 150, right? So, like, there's 150 people that you can have in your wide world. There are about 5 that you can have close to you, and then it's like 15, and then it grows and grows. But, like, in order to have the amount of energy required to date, you need to really focus on it or take people out of your life, right? Like, I probably interact with 50 to 60 people on a daily basis at work. So, like, I'm kind of full.
Yeah.
And dating doesn't help, right? Because it's not, and you don't feel bad about it because it doesn't really feel human. You're like just talking on this random device and they're not human.
So, like, kind of like going on Reddit and start talking to people, you know, it's not that different.
Yeah. Although that could be slightly more amusing than dating apps these days.
True. Yes.
some of the conversations there are hilarious. I actually just got banned from Reddit because I was posting a lot about Hattie, but that's a different conversation. you know, you've got to do what you've got to do when you're a first-time founder. So I was just sat there after a week of basically just, like, exhaustion with dating. And I had, I think it was Love is Blind on in the background.
Mm-hmm.
Don't know if you've watched Love is Blind, but the whole concept is... I have not,
but I'm familiar with it, yeah. But please explain.
Yeah, the whole concept is that you can fall in love with someone just by talking to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when I say talking, I mean like having a real conversation, but you cannot see what they look like. So what they do is they hide you behind a wall. And I think it's for weeks and weeks on end, you talk to different people behind this wall and then you slowly whittle it down to one person that you basically marry on TV.
Yeah.
And it got me thinking about if you can do that on TV, right? And like not really know anyone, but speaking to someone for weeks and weeks on end, can lead to like a really deep, meaningful relationship. So, and some of them are still married, right? Like, and that's unheard of. Then maybe there's a different way for us to date. that's more connecting.
Mm-hmm.
I started writing down ideas, and I was like, okay, well, maybe we do it this way and all this other stuff. Put a pitch deck together, and I was like really excited about it. And I was like, look, this is going to revolutionize dating. And it was 2 years ago. I messaged my best friend, and I was like, look, I'm onto something. Hear me out. We're going to change dating, yada, yada, yada. And she worked in like the VC space at the time, in kind of PR marketing. And she replied and said, I think you'd be a great founder, but this is a terrible idea. She was like, people don't invest in ideas like this. You don't have a USP. No one speaks on the phone anymore. You're barking up the wrong tree. You're going to put a load of time and energy into something that's going to fail. And that hit really hard, like really hard. I think like when an idea is so nascent and it's so fragile, right? Because I've not validated it. I've not tested it. It's not ready to be exposed to criticism. And I think if you're listening to this and you know a founder, be careful of them at the start, because especially in those kind of first couple of months, they're still trying to build their own confidence around the idea. So if you go in and bash it, you're basically taking a sledgehammer to everything.
Yeah.
Because they don't have that inbuilt confidence in the idea yet, right? Like, it's like if you turn up to your first job ever on day one and someone told you were absolutely useless, go home. You don't have, you know, the background or to be.
I mean, confident. There's also no grounds to bash ideas like in the start. They're ideas. They could either work or not work. Nobody knows yet, right? So like, this just the same thing as you're confident for it to work. Someone non-confident about it is as a guess. As anything else, you know, like, so why destroy people's ideas so early based on nothing?
Exactly. And I think it's based on all people's own personal experience, right? So she'd been in a relationship for a really long time. She's never used Tinder, Bumble, Hinge. You know, there's a whole load of
biases, the biases we all have. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, so I put it back in a box, and every so often I take it out of the box and I was like, am I ready for it? Like, and I think over that 2 year span, I built my own confidence in the idea, and I refined it and reiterated it and talked to other people and slowly started getting it out of this box and thinking, that's one person's view of the world. There are, fortunately 8 billion people in the world. So maybe someone else's view will be different. Someone else's view will align to mine. And that's not saying that, you know, if you're a friend of a founder, don't ever give them your real opinion, but just be conscious that. Yeah. It takes a lot of effort and it takes a lot of courage to even share your idea with the world. Like, that was the scariest part of all of this, was having to talk to someone about it, because in your head, you can build it up to whatever you want it to be, right? In my head, this is a multi-billion pound company and I've saved, you know, so many people heartache, and I like have made billions of matches on it and everyone's in love. And the narrative in my head is really nice. So taking it out of this really comfortable cocoon of like, it can be anything in your mind, right? That's the whole thing about imagination. And it's safe and comfortable. And taking it out and exposing it to the real world is really scary.
Yeah.
And so I didn't tell most of my friends I was working on this until a couple of days before we launched the website, because I was so scared and I didn't know. It kind of felt like someone was going through my underwear drawer and it was just not comfortable in any way. Mm-hmm. So what I did was launched the website and kind of messaged everyone all at once and then kind of turned my phone off because it was stressing me out. I was like, I don't want to know what people think. I don't want to hear about it. But like, since then, the journey's gotten a lot easier. You know, like, you take the feedback, the good with the bad, you are more accepting of it, and you realize the reality is never what you made in your head. But you at least now have the idea out there. And I think that's the hardest part.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. So that's quite a journey. It's a long time that you've been brewing with this idea. And besides the, let's say, so I mean, it's very clear from your experience that you've been frustrated with the way things are in terms of like the mechanisms of the apps, the way they work, the way people, you know, like treat each other in that sense, like the ghosting, getting stood up and stuff like that. Have you had like any defining dating experiences that kind of, you know, made you think about things in a different way, or like things that really made you like angry or felt super horrible in that sense?
I've had lots of like positive and negative dating experiences, and I've probably been positive and negative to other people, right? I think there's a mismatch of stuff out there. I've dated some incredible people from dating apps. It's just been the wrong timing, or like we haven't quite, you know, managed to get it to work, because relationships are really difficult. I've had some terrible dating experiences where I've had to leave because people have made me feel really uncomfortable on a date. I had dated one guy who was a real misogynist and told me that I didn't have a voice or an opinion on date one, which was slightly interesting to say the least. But I've also had some incredible first dates, you know, like I've had first dates that, you know, we've kissed in the rain and it's been magical and it's been amazing. And those people are still my friends. So I think that's the great thing about dating apps, is they expose you to people you wouldn't necessarily have in your life if you weren't on them. And I've, you know, maintained a lot of really great friendships from the dating apps. I just think that we need to rethink them and build a version of them that actually takes the good without the bad, right? Like, how do we change the funnel and make the funnel more effective? Today, 5% of matches turn into dates. 33% of matches turn into conversations. That's
really
terrible numbers. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
It's, like, I wouldn't play those odds. I don't have time to be playing those odds. Like, I want to make, that's like, at my company, we have like, not my, this company, but like the bank, we have full-time business development people, right? And their funnel is about that like progression.
Yeah.
Like we pay someone to do business development. We know it's hard and very little converts. And you're saying that's what we have to live through in our day-to-day dating lives. That's not fun.
Where's the data from, if I may ask? Like, how do you know that?
In the internet, they've done loads of surveys for people. They've looked at the data.
Oh, I see.
They've done YouGov surveys. There's all sorts of surveys out there. Around all of this, like there was one survey I read where 80% of people on dating apps felt emotionally burnt out by them, right? Like that's not a good place to be.
Yeah. You mentioned that you, in the beginning, you mentioned you tried Evenfield.
Yeah.
What was your experience with that? Because I'm curious, because this, the app comes up a lot of times because they've been pushing pretty hard
lately. Yeah, I think Field is like a really interesting one, right? Because people are a lot more open about their sexual preferences, which I don't think is a bad thing, right? I think that's a great thing. But again, if you're someone who is looking for a monogamous long-term relationship,
yeah,
it's not really there designed for that, which is kind of its whole thing, right? Its whole thing is around...
they're kind of saying that upfront in some way, right? Yeah.
I mean, I know some people that have gone on Field and actually weirdly met their long-term partner, but again, it's more of an app for exploring your sexuality. And I think as each of these apps kind of comes out, like Tinder has now is a hookup app, let's be really honest.
Grindr is a hookup app. In my case, like for I think Tinder is like gone. That's it. I don't know what's going on there, but it's definitely not usable anymore.
It's honestly disgusting. So Tinder's gone. Bumble, I don't want to speak all the freaking time as the first person. I think I now use Bumble for their business one. Hinge, I've been banned from, which is interesting because I was promoting Hattie on Hinge. So they banned me.
Okay. Well, yeah, they do that.
Yeah, they do that. I had one of my profile pictures as like the Metro article, and they were like, you can go now. So I was like, that's not real promotion. I'm just showing that I was in a news article. But anyway, but I think Hinge was one of the least bad ones until they realized they had to monetize their app.
That's what happens to all of them. Yeah.
But that's why I also think Hattie is really interesting, because we never monetize the user. We get commissions from restaurants. We get all of that stuff. So we don't have to hide people behind paywalls. Like after our MVP launches, we're also going to offer dating coaching, mental health like services, dating app reviews, all of that stuff, which are ancillary services that provide people value where the value isn't just themselves. So we don't have to hide people behind a paywall. We don't have to say to people like, pay or you don't get to see the matches you want, because that's not our revenue model.
So maybe a slightly more controversial question is, what is the, I mean, I guess you can't tell me like exactly, but how does the app decide what profiles to show to users?
So that's based on the user's preferences, right? So if you tell us that you only will date someone between the ages of 30 and 40 in, and they have to be X amount of distance from you, and you want kids, you want to be married, etc., we filter those profiles and then show you everyone that matches that. So it's a lot more based on kind of the things that actually matter than the things that don't matter.
Okay.
And the algorithm will learn over time.
Okay. But I mean, if there is like, I don't know, 5,000 people that answer that criteria, who will go up first? Like, how is that?
So at the start, it will be completely random. And then as people like each other and have their own preferences, it will get better with time.
Okay. And do you generally aim the app only for monogamous people, or is it only also for non-monogamous people who want long-term dating?
I think at the start, it's very much for intentional daters who are looking for, you know, to find that one person to be with. Because I think there's a plethora of other apps now that cater for everything. Whereas I haven't found an app which is just for intentional daters who want to find their long-term partner.
Interesting. Okay. As a non-monogamous myself, I find it very much the opposite. But
do you?
Yeah. Like, I feel like at the moment, it's just Field that kind of offers like an intentional open space for like non-monogamous people, because Bumble doesn't have that at all. And they definitely
Hinge
should do something
now
about it. Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So Hinge, you can say what type of relationship you're looking for. And before I got banned, my one was flooded with like people saying they were in open relationships looking for like someone to join them.
Oh, yeah. That's definitely not what Hinge is for. From their mission statement, at least.
No, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's also a big problem in all of these apps, that they are very like aimless in their, like, just try to hit all targets, you know, and I think that's problematic. I think that there's like this, you know, for me, when I go on like Bumble or whatever, I find it kind of silly that I have to pay for a premium membership in order to filter the type of relationship people want. Because this is the fundamental thing, right? So what they tell me as a user is like, okay, you have to now just, we're forcing you to go through things that might not be relevant for you just because we want you to pay. And I think that's been kind of a trend in a lot of these apps lately, especially.
It's the exact same, right? Like, you can't filter on anything that really genuinely matters until you pay. Like, if the app was really there to help people find love, surely those would be the things that we allow people to ask. And that's, Patty, like, that's so key to us. Like, we ask you probably more questions than you'll ever want to answer, but you can skip some of them. But things like, what are your love languages? Like, is marriage important to you? Is the other person's religion important to you? There are some people who will only date someone who is religious, and some people who will only date people that aren't religious. Like, if you want to get married, are you stringent on those views, or are you open to date people that have different views to you? Like, because these are the things that when push comes to shove really impact compatibility, right? Like, what are your values? All of this stuff is really important. The Hinge prompts, which are like, you know, my favorite thing I did last year, or, you know,
the generic prompts,
these are all ridiculous things that we ask.
Yeah, who gives a fuck? Yeah, it's like really so random stuff. There's nothing to do with those prompts, you know, like nobody ever addresses any prompts from my experience.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, for me, I think one of the biggest things is actually asking questions that matter and being able to allow people to tell us what matters and then filter on that, because that's fundamentally how you build a long-term sustainable like relationship. Like, the type of text you are doesn't matter. Your greatest achievement in your life doesn't matter. You know, two truths and a dare, or a lie, or whatever they call it, doesn't matter. You know, like, everyone just brags about random things. It doesn't. And I think the whole concept is they wanted a dating app that was more intentional, but they didn't ask intentional questions. They just made it gimmicky, and like, no one fills those in properly. I find them utterly frustrating. Whereas on Hattie, you'll never have to answer any of those. On your profile, you do have to record a voice note. So the About Me is a recorded voice note about yourself. So it allows someone to kind of listen to who you are before they see your profile picture. Yeah. we ask for one video so someone can see your mannerisms, like how do you show up? It can be a video of you and your friends. It could be you doing your favorite hobby. And then we ask for a number of photos, but we do have kind of like a four section questionnaire that you have to answer when you join the app. One, mm-hmm. which is about you. Two, which is kind of about your dating preferences. Like, what are you looking for? Three, your kind of values around marriage, kids, that kind of stuff. And then four, around your kind of dating preferences with Hattie. So like, whether you are a phone call person, a video person, what kind of first date you want to go on, what's your budget, who you think yeah. pays, you know, all of those things yeah. that allow us to make the decision about where to send you.
Okay. Another controversial question, I think, that maybe people might ask. Good. So I think a lot of people, you know, when they think about dating apps, there's like this, I mean, I think you can call it a conspiracy-esque kind of idea that the dating apps don't want us to stop dating, right? They want us to keep being on the app. So then people, I would assume, might ask, why? What is your interest as a business to let people go off the app in that sense?
I will tell you, because I love this conspiracy, because investors also have the same conspiracy, right? They're like, you're going to eat up all of your, you know, all of your users, and then everyone's going to be in a relationship and you'll have no one. If only, Eden, life was that easy. There are 16 million single people in the UK right now. 5 million of them use a dating app. There is so much room for growth in dating apps. It's unheard of. I want people to meet someone, because then that means the product's working, which means someone is going to go and refer their friend who is fed up of dating and wants to meet someone, and that word of mouth will spread. If we ever get to a day where we've got every single person that's looking for a relationship on the app will be hugely successful. And if we manage to match every single person that day, like, you know what, miracles would have happened, and, you know, there's something else weird is going on. But like, I think we need to get away from this idea that the goal of a dating app is to keep you on there. It's to find you someone you can go and explore a relationship with. But there's always going to be extra single people hitting the market, right? Like, relationships don't work out forever, unfortunately. The divorce rate's 50%, if not higher now.
Mm-hmm.
But if you create an app that genuinely helps people, that genuinely, you know, people enjoy using for the time that they're on it, and I'm not saying forever, you create an app that will actually last, unlike Bumble, Hinge, Tinder, where everyone's now deleting it, you know?
Mm.
And I think that's the worst possible outcome. I would rather have, you know, less people. I don't intend to have as many people as Hinge, Bumble, and Tinder have on their apps. I intend to have just the market that we are looking for, which is intentional daters. But I want it to be a positive experience, so that anytime anyone does unfortunately become single, or chooses to become single, but wants to find someone, we're the go-to app.
Okay. Yeah. It's a very matchmaker vibe overall, you know.
Yeah.
Very shidduch kind of vibe. But
matchmakers have made a living from it for generations,
yeah,
Ryan.
It's exactly. Yeah.
So, and you don't run out of single people, unfortunately, because, you know, it's not as people assume, like, you end up married and then you stay married for the rest of your life, like maybe you did 100 years ago. Unfortunately, that's not the case. I'd love that to be the case. But what I want is to create a really positive experience for people, that if they do find themselves back in the market, they have a trusted source that they can use.
Yeah. Okay. So to wrap things up, I have two questions. What was or have been your most weird and horrible date ever?
Oh, my most, probably the misogynist. That was the most uncomfortable I've ever been on a date. And it's probably the closest I've ever been to, I actually asked the waitress to get me out of the restaurant.
Oh, wow. Okay. And did she?
Yeah, she helped. It was really uncomfortable. I didn't feel safe. Being told you don't have a voice or opinion is really quite daunting.
Yeah.
And when I tried to talk to him about it, there was just no way it was going to move through. So that was probably my worst one. What about you? What's your worst?
Many. Too many.
Well, you have to pick one.
I can't really pick one. I have to say there, and all of them are very long stories, but I would say that lately, I think the worst has been definitely people canceling like an hour before when I asked them, or like when I told them I'm going to be 5 minutes late. And then they're like, actually, no, I'm not showing up to the date. And then, you know, like if I wouldn't have asked, then
we wouldn't know.
We wouldn't know. We just go to the place, you know. And that happened a couple of times, I think, in the last few months. And that has not been nice.
Sorry, that's awful.
Yeah, I think, you know, like from all my stories, people always ask me this, like, what is the most horrible thing? I think these are the most horrible ones because they're not this. It's just a horrible feeling to have, you know, it's a feeling of being rejected. It's a feel of being not respected, you know. So I think that's really the gist of the horrible sides of online dating. So, yeah, I would say that. And the second question.
When Hattie launches in Germany, you won't have to experience that anymore because they'll be banned from there.
Amen. Second question is, have you ever been someone's horrible date, to your knowledge?
Yes, probably. I'm going to be really honest. I got to a point of dating where I was so fed up with it. I'd go on a date, and if it didn't work for the like in the first 15 minutes, I'd leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I, looking back on it, this was years and years ago, that probably wasn't the kindest way to treat people. But in my head, I was like, well, I'm not wasting anyone's time. So, you know, I'm just going to leave because it's not working. Whereas actually, I think as I've gotten older and more mature, actually like giving someone the courtesy of sitting there because they've made the effort to turn up and you've made the effort to shut up. And even if it's not going to go anywhere, you can get a friendship out of it. I think probably, yeah. So I probably have been a couple of people's horrible dates.
I see. All right. Okay. Well, thank you for being honest. I have not done that. No, I'm going to stick around and just like talk. I don't mind.
Have you done anything bad on a day?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, in my head, I think it's always like a reaction to someone else in that sense. But I've definitely had one date. I remember it was just like 10 minutes. It was like a few years ago. And we just met in a park. And she started, she was looking for a word in German. And she found it eventually. And I was like, what does that word mean? And she's like, it means this and this. You're supposed to know this. Like, you live here for a few years. And I was like, you know, like, what I'm supposed to know and what I'm not supposed to know is my business, you know?
Yeah.
And then she started like, you know, just bickering about how, like, if you're a foreigner here, you have to speak German. And it's like, you know, like I she basically kind of pushed on that. And I was trying to be like, kind of, you know, like I have my own shit to deal with. Like, it's not. And she was like, all my foreign friends, they know German. Like, I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. And then at some point I was like, okay, I just gave up. So I was like, and she was a psychologist. So,
great from her. And I also think the fact that you can speak English, German, I'm assuming you speak, other languages too.
Yes. Yeah. I speak Hebrew, native language. So,
yeah. So like the fact that you can speak three languages is incredible. Like that's more than most people can.
Yeah. I mean, 100%. Even if you disregard this, don't like push people to speak in your language, you know, that's not very hospitable of you in your own country.
And also just because you don't know one word doesn't mean that you haven't tried.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. And so I just told her something along the line of like, I hope she doesn't treat her patients like this. And she got really, really mad and started screaming at me and cursing also. And
that's a bad first date.
Yeah. And I mean, I kind of participated because I was just like, fuck it. So I just like went with her flow. You know, I was like going with it. Called her very right-wingy kind of things. You know, like as she is one right-wingy person. Because, you know, there's something nationalistic about these opinions. So, So yeah, and then she just left and I've never talked to her since. So I think in her mind, definitely, I was really horrible, you know?
But I think that it also goes down to communication, right? And it goes down to like what you value about a person and the person you're dating.
Yeah.
And I think like communication, we're all human. We all see the world the way we see it, right? And I will never understand the world from your perspective because I don't live in your head. I've only ever lived in my head.
Yeah.
And I think that's why communication is so hard, right? Like, we don't get to experience anything other than who we are and what we think and feel. So you communicate from this point of like so much knowledge about the things that you know. And therefore, I find this really interesting in business as well. Like, you can be talking to someone and you come out and you've heard completely different things. But communication is so key.
Yeah. And like everyone, I've also ghosted people. I also, like, you know, not intentionally, it just happens sometimes. And, you know, haven't really paid attention to what I'm doing, what I'm saying, how I communicate. And that is partially why I started doing this, right? Because I wanted to understand this whole experience and why are we like this? And I think this really helped me, you know, to kind of understand myself. And I do make 200% efforts to communicate. And I think that's like the main thing we all need to do to kind of like respect another human being that met us, you know, and in that sense, or we were about to meet, and just like give them some clarity in that sense.
Yeah. Give them some time, give them some effort, give them some communication and see what happens.
Yeah.
We're just very quick to drop people now, aren't we? We're like, there's five other people in the queue. So why would I bother?
Yeah. There's always like the prospect, like the fake prospect of endless more people, right? And that's I think a problem. So thank you so much, Zahira, for coming and talking about your experience and your app. And maybe you can briefly mention, where can people find your app?
Yeah, so if you go on to datewithhati.com, you can sign up to be one of our first users. The app will launch to have people kind of generate their profiles, etc., in the next couple of weeks. We're just doing kind of a pre-launch. And then the full app will go live as soon as we hit 10 to 20,000 users. So we can actually have people to match people with.
And that's in London specifically.
Yeah, London, UK. And then as soon as we get the wait list up for different countries, different cities, we launch them one at a time. So if you are interested and you're not in London, definitely put your name down so we can track where we're getting interest from. And if you've got any feedback on the app or things that you'd love to see, I'm trying to build a dating app for everyone, not just me. So I'm definitely keen to hear people's thoughts on what else they'd love to see on a revolutionary new dating app.
Nice. All right. Okay. Then thank you very much.
And thank you so much for having me. And thanks for everyone listening. It's been a real pleasure.